This is a very interesting book from 1915, The Astral World, Its Scenes, Dwellers, and Phenomena, by Swami Panchar Darcy, pseudonym for William Walker Atkinson, December 5, 1862 - November 22, 1932. 1915, Chicago. Numbers read is mainly page numbers. Also audio as well, a Norwegian translation of this book is done. Headline, The Seven Planes. Chapter 1, The Seven Planes. Every student of occultism, from the humblest beginner to the most advanced pupil, has a full realization of the wonders of that strange plane of being known as the astral world. The beginner, of course, has not the privilege of actually viewing life on this plane, except, perhaps, in exceptional cases, or under extraordinary circumstances. But even he finds constant reference to the subject in the treatise his studies, and soon discovers that that particular plane is the scene and field of some very strange phenomena. As he advances, and learns more of the occult laws and principles, he develops still greater interest in the subject. And, when he reaches the stage in which he is able to actually sense, by astral vision, on this plane, he finds that a new world of experience has opened out before him. The oldest occult teachings, as well as the latest, inform the student that there are seven planes of being. The lowest of these planes is that which is known as the material plane. Second in order is that which is known as the plane of forces. The third is that which is known as the astral plane. The fourth is that which is known as the mental plane. Above these four planes are three higher planes, known to occultists, but which have no names that can be understood by those dwelling only on the lower planes, and which are incapable of explanation to those on the lower planes. I shall refer to some of these higher planes, in this little book, as we proceed, but shall make no attempt to describe them for the reasons just given. Our subject for the present consideration is merely the astral plane, and we shall find sufficient interesting facts in considering the phenomena of that plane without attempting to penetrate the veils of those still higher. It should be mentioned at this point, that each of the seven planes has seven subplanes, and that each of these subplanes has its own seven subdivisions, and so on to the seventh degree of subdivision. So, you see, there is a most minute classification in the occult teachings. The student of occultism, at the beginning, usually experiences difficulty in forming a clear conception of the meaning of the word plane. As used in the occult teachings, consulting the dictionary, he is apartment to get the idea of a plane as one of a series of straight layers, one part of a great strata above and below which are other layers or strata. It usually is quite difficult for the occult teacher to eradicate this erroneous idea from the mind of his pupils, and to substitute the correct concept. This error arises from thinking of these planes of being as composed of matter, or material substance, which, of course, is incorrect. When it is remembered that even the densest form of matter itself is composed of vibrations of energy, as recognized by modern science, and that the forces of nature are but manifestations of vibrations of energy, one begins to find the key. Instead of the planes rising one above the other in the scale of the fineness of matter, they are graded according to their respective degrees of vibration of energy. In short, they are planes of vibrations of energy, and not planes of matter at all. Matter is simply the lowest degree of vibrations of energy, that is all. The second common source of error, on the part of the beginner in occultism, is that of picturing the planes as lying one above the other in space. This conception, of course, naturally follows upon the error of thinking of the planes as a series of layers or strata of fine matter, but it also often persists even after the student has grasped the idea that the planes are grades of vibration, rather than of matter. But, finally, the student is impressed with the idea that the planes are not layers or strata at all. The planes do not lie one above the other, in space. They have not spatial distinction or degree. They interpenetrate each other in the same point of space. A single point of space may have its manifestations of each and all of the seven planes of being. Some of the old occultists sought to explain this condition of things to their students in the words of a very celebrated ancient teacher, who originated the aphorism, "A plane of being is not a place, but a state of being." No words can give a better explanation of, or aid to, the correct mental conception of the idea of a plane in the occult sense of the term. To those students who may find it difficult to form the idea of a number of manifestations, each having its own rate of vibration, occupying the same point of space at the same time, I would say that a little consideration of the phenomena of the physical world will perhaps serve as an aid in the matter. For instance, every student of physics knows that a single point of space may contain vibrations of heat, light of many shades, magnetism, electricity, X-rays, etc., etc., each manifesting its own rate of vibration, and yet not interfering with the others. Every beam of sunlight contains many different colors, each with its own rate of vibration, and yet none crowding out the others. By the proper laboratory apparatus, each kind of light may be separated from the others, and the ray thus split up. The difference in the colors arises simply from the different rate of etheric vibrations. Again, it is possible to send many telegrams along the same wire, at the same time, by using senders and receivers of different vibratory keynotes. The same thing has its corresponding analogy in the case of wireless telegraphy. So, you see, even on the physical planes we find many forms of vibratory manifestation occupying the same point of space at the same time. The material plane, with which we are all familiar, has, of course, its seven subplanes, and likewise its 7x7 series of subdivisions, as have all the seven planes. At first we are apartment to think that we are perfectly familiar with every form of matter, but this is far from being the case, for we are familiar with only a few forms. The occult teachings show us that on certain of the fixed stars, and some of the planets of our own chain, there are forms and kinds of matter as much lower in vibration than the densest form of matter known to us, as these dense forms are lower than the highest ultra-gaseous forms of matter recognized by us. And, on the other hand, the same teachings inform us that there are in existence, in other worlds, and even, to an extent, in our own, forms and kinds of matter as much higher than these highest forms of ultra-gaseous matter known to us, as the said known forms are higher than the densest form of matter now known to us. This is a startling statement, but every advanced occultist knows it to be true. Physical science formally classified matter as follows: 1. Solids, 2. Liquids, 3. Gaseous. But modern science has found many forms of matter far more tenuous and rarer than even the finest gas. It now calls this fourth class ultra-gaseous matter. But occultists know that beyond this fourth subplane of matter which science is just now discovering, the like three are there, and still finer, subplanes, of which science at present has no conception. Next higher in the scale of manifested being, we find what is known as the plane of forces, of which very little is known outside of occult science, although, of later years, physical science has been breaking into this field. In the next 20 years, physical science will proceed further in this direction. The research into radioactivity is leading toward further knowledge regarding this plane of manifestation. On the plane of forces, we find the seven subplanes, and likewise the 7x7 subdivision. There are forces far below the scale of the ordinary forces of nature known to man. And, likewise, there are great series of nature's finer forces at the other end of the scale, of which the ordinary man, even the scientist, knows nothing. It is these finer forces which account for many of the wonders of occult science. In particular, the fine force called prana or vital force plays an important part in all occult phenomena. Next above the scale of the plane of forces, we find the great astral plane, the consideration of which is the purpose of this little book. Headline, Chapter 2. Astral Regions. In the occult teachings we find frequent references to what are called the astral regions, and the inhabitants and phenomena of said regions. Like the term plane, this term region has caused much misunderstanding. The old occultists used it in a loose sense, knowing that their pupils clearly understood the real significance. They did not care whether or not other persons understood. But the modern investigator, without the benefit of a teacher, often finds himself confused by this mention of regions of the astral plane, and frequently finds himself thinking of them in the sense of the heavens and hells of the old theology as definite places in space. But these astral regions are nothing more than vibrational manifestations on the astral plane, which have no special reference to any set-aside portion of space, and which manifestations may, and do, occur at almost any point of space. The astral regions occupy the same space as the material regions, neither interfering with the other. The term astral is derived from the Greek word meaning related to a star, and was originally used in describing the heavens of the Greeks, the abodes of their gods. From this sense and usage the term widened in application, until it was employed to indicate what might be called the ghostland of the ancient people. This ghostland was believed to be inhabited by beings of an ethereal nature, not only disembodied spirits, but also angelic beings of a higher order. The ancient occultists of Greece, and other Western lands, thus naturally fell into the custom of using the familiar term to indicate that which we know as the astral plane in modern occultism. Of course, the Oriental occultists had their own terms for this plane of manifestation, which terms were derived from old Sanskrit roots, and which were much older than the Greek terms. But, as the use of Sanskrit terms has a tendency to confuse Western students, the best Oriental teachers, today, in teaching Western students, almost always use the old Greek occult terms. At this point, I must answer a question which usually presents itself to the mind of the intelligent student at about this particular stage of the teaching. It is probably in the mind of the student who is reading these words, at this particular moment. The question may be stated as follows: how is it possible for anyone to speak intelligently of the phenomena of the astral plane, if that plane is on a higher vibratory scale than the physical senses? How can one visit, and perceive things on, the astral plane, without his body being dematerialized? This question is a natural and perfectly fair one, and evidences the inquiring mind which the true occultist always possesses. And no true occult teacher will hesitate for a moment in frankly answering it. For, remember this always, my students, the occult teaching is not based merely on the principles laid down as gospel by the old occultists. Respect, yes, great respect is paid to these old teachings, of course, but every advanced occultist knows that he must actually experience the manifestation of occult phenomena before he can positively pronounce the same to be an occult truth. Such experience comes to every advanced occultist, when he reaches the necessary stage of development which alone renders such experience safe for him. Like the scientist, the true occultist learns by his own experience, built upon the recorded previous experience of others. To the advanced occultist, the phenomena of the astral plane is just as real, just as readily sensed as is the phenomena of the material plane to those functioning upon it. But, to answer the question, one does not have to disintegrate or dematerialize his physical body in order to visit or sense the astral plane and its phenomena. There are two avenues of approach to the astral plane, as follows: I, by the employment of the astral senses, and, two, by visiting in the so-called astral body. Let us consider each of these avenues in turn. By the term the astral senses, occultists indicate that wonderful secondary set of senses, corresponding in office to the five physical senses, by means of which man is able to receive impressions on the astral plane. Each of the physical senses of man has its astral counterpart, which functions on the astral plane just as the physical senses do upon the material plane. Thus every man has, in latency, the power of seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and tasting, on the astral plane, by means of these five astral senses. Nay more, as all advanced occultists know, man really has seven physical senses instead of five, though these additional two senses are not sufficiently developed for use in the average person, though the occultist affair attainment generally unfolds them into use. And even these two extra-physical senses also have their astral counterparts. In the cases of persons who, accidentally or through careful training, have developed the power of astral vision perception through astral sight, the scenes of the astral plane are perceived just as clearly as are those of the material plane perceived by the physical sense of sight. The ordinary clairvoyant has flashes of this astral vision, as a rule, and is not able to sense astrally by an act of will. The trained occultist, on the other hand, is able to shift from one set of senses to another, by an act of will, whenever he wishes to do so. In fact, such occultists may function on both planes at the same time, in this way, if they so desire. In cases of clairvoyance, or astral visioning, the occultist remains in his physical body, and senses the phenomena of the astral plane quite naturally or easily. It is not necessary for him even to enter into a trance condition, or any abnormal mental state or condition. And still less is it necessary for him to leave his physical body in such cases. In the instance of the higher form of clairvoyance, he may, 17, even sense events both on the physical plane, as well as the astral planes, at a distance though, strictly speaking, this belongs to a somewhat different order of occult phenomena. To vision astrally, the occultist has merely to shift his sensory mechanism, just as the operator on the typewriter shifts from the small letter type to the capitals by a shift k. This, then, is the simplest and most common way of occult sensing on the astral plane. It is possible to many to whom the second method is impossible. The second avenue of approach to the astral plane is that in which the individual leaves his physical body, and actually travels on the astral plane in his astral body. The astral body is composed of an etheral substance of a very high degree of vibration. It is not mere matter, and yet is not mere force. It is composed of astral substance which resembles very fine matter, but which is far more tenuous than anything that is known as matter. Ordinarily the astral body can be sensed only by means of the astral vision, but under certain other conditions it takes on the semblance of a vapory form of matter, and is perceptible to the ordinary physical senses as a ghost or apparition, even when the person is in physical life. 18. The astral body is an exact counterpart of the physical body, but survives the latter by a number of years. It is not immortal, however, and finally disintegrates and is resolved into its original elements just as is the physical body. The advanced occultist, in his astral body, is able to leave his physical body, which remains in a state of sleep or trance, and to visit at will on the astral plane, even at points in space far removed from his physical body. He, however, is always connected with the physical body by a thin, cobweb-like, filament of ethereal substance, which extends or contracts as he travels away from, or toward, the sleeping physical body. If this filament is broken by an accident on the astral plane, his physical body dies and he is never able to return to it. Such accidents are rare, but occult history has records showing their occasional occurrence. Many persons are able to travel in the astral body, during ordinary sleep, but usually have no recollection of the same upon reawakening. The occultist, on the other hand, travels consciously, and with a purpose, and always is wide awake on such journeys. He is as much at home on the astral plane as on the physical one. 19. And so, student, you see how the occult teaching regarding the astral plane has been obtained, and how such teaching has as firm a basis in actual experience as have those based upon physical observation, experiment, and experience. Moreover, every occultist may verify the teaching for himself, in fact actually does so. Chapter 3. Reality of the astral. It is customary among occultists to speak of the astral plane, simply as the astral, as for instance out in the astral, visiting the astral phenomena of the astral inhabitants of the astral, etc., etc. The student may as well familiarize himself with this use of the term the astral, in order to understand, and be understood by, others interested in occult study. Accordingly, I shall from now on use this term, the astral, as indicating the astral regions the astral plane without further explanation. One of the hardest things for the elementary student to realize is that the astral is just as real, abiding, and fixed as is the material world. Just as steam is actually as real as water, or even as ice, so is the astral just as real as the world of the physical senses. For that matter, if we could see our world of matter placed under a sufficiently strong magnifying glass, we should perceive it not as a great body of solid fixed matter, but rather as an aggregation of an infinite number of the tiniest particles, themselves built into atoms, these built into molecules, and these built into solid masses. The space between the ions of the material atom is as comparatively great as the space between the planets of our solar system. And every ion, atom and molecule is in constant and intense motion. Under a glass of sufficient power, there would seem to be nothing solid in the material world. If the magnifying glass were to be raised to an infinite power, even the ions would melt into seething nothingness, and there would be nothing left but the ether which has no weight and which is imperceptible to the senses even when aided by the strongest instruments of the laboratory. So you see, the solidity of things is merely relative and comparative. The vibration of substance on the astral is higher than those of the material plane, but even the astral vibrations are far slower than those of the next higher plane, and so on. To the traveler on the astral, the scenery, and everything connected therewith, seems as solid as the most solid material does to the physical eye. It really is just as solid as is the astral body in which you visit it, for that matter. As for reality, the astral is just as real as is the material, in every respect. 22. The forces of nature are not perceptible to the physical eye, except as manifesting through matter, but they are very real as all of us know by experience. You cannot see electricity, but when you receive its shock you realize its reality. You cannot see the force of gravity, but you become painfully aware of its reality when it drops an apple on your head, or causes you to fall suddenly when you make a misstep on the curb of the street. In fact, it is realized by all advanced occultists, that if there really can be said to be any degrees in reality between things, the balance is in favor of the finer forms of substance and forces, and against the less fine. So, student, never permit yourself to think of the astral as something comparatively unreal, or as only relatively existent. I, of course, am not speaking of reality in the metaphysical sense of the term, for in such sense the entire manifested universe, including all of its planes, is unreal as compared to the one reality. And, again, do not permit yourself to think of the astral senses as being one whit less real, reliable and important than those of the physical body. Each class of sense perception has its own proper field in which it is king. Each is master in its own realm. And there should be no attempt to draw distinctions of reality between them. At the last, they are all but the mechanism of consciousness, or awareness, each adapted to the peculiar requirements of its environment. The astral has its scenery, geography, and things, just as has the material world. These things are just as real as are England, the Vatican, St. Paul's, the capital at Washington, Broadway, Piccadilly, or the Rue de la Paix, the great redwood trees of California, the Grand Canyon, the Alps, or the Black Forest. Its inhabitants are just as real as any of the great men of the country in which you live, or those of any other country, whose names I hesitate to call, lest they pass from this material plane and thus become unreal even before these printed words pass before your eye. So impermanent are the inhabitants and things of even this real, material world. The law of constant change operates on the astral just as on the material plane. There, things come and go, just as they do here on the material plane. Stop a moment and concentrate on the gist of the matter, and you will see that the difference between the things of the two planes is simply like the difference between red and blue, simply a difference in the rate of vibration of substance. And this again is the cause of the difference between steel and hydrogen gas, between electricity and light, between magnetism and heat, simply a difference of vibrations of substance. Moreover, and this is quite important to the student, the astral has its laws just as has the material world. These laws must be learned and observed, otherwise the inhabitants of the astral, as well as the visitor thereto, will reap the result which always comes from broken natural laws. Again, there exists what may be called the geography of the astral, if this material plane word is permitted in this connection. There are regions, points of space, places, kingdoms, countries, etc., on the astral, just as on the material plane. Sometimes these astral regions have no connection with any on the material plane, while in other cases they have a very direct connection with and relation to material places and the inhabitants thereof. One may travel from one region of the astral to another, by simply an act of will which raises the vibration of the astral body, without it moving a point in space. Again, one may travel in space from one point to another, on the astral, in cases where these points have some relation to points on the material plane. As an instance of this latter form of travel, I would say that one may travel in the astral from Berlin to Bombay in but the twinkle of an eye, as regards time, by merely wishing or willing to do so. Yes, time and space have their manifestation on the astral. But, nevertheless, certain astral manifestations, on its 7x7 subplanes, may be, and likely are, present therein, at, and on, the exact point of space which you are occupying at this moment on the material plane and this very moment of time, now. If you have the knowledge and power, you, without leaving your seat, may traverse all of these subplanes, one after the other, witnessing their scenery and inhabitants, their phenomena and activity, and then return to the material plane all in a moment of time, and without changing a single point in space. Or, if you prefer, you may travel to any of these subplanes of the astral, at your point of space, and then travel in space on the astral to some other place on that subplane, and then have the choice of returning either the same way by which you came, or else descending to the material plane and traveling on it, in your astral body, back to where your physical body is resting. Read over these last two paragraphs, until you get the idea clearly fixed in your mind, for by so doing you will be able to comprehend more easily that which I shall have to say to you in the following chapters of this book. In traveling on the astral, one meets with many strange inhabitants of that wonderful realm of nature, some pleasant and others unpleasant. Some of these inhabitants have passed on from the material plane, while others have never dwelt there, these latter forms being natives of the astral and peculiar to itself. In my personal class instruction, I have found it advantageous to my students for me to describe the phenomena of the astral to them in my lectures, in the form of the story of a trip in the astral, rather than as a dry, technical description. In such lectures, I assume that the students are present on the astral with me, and that I am acting as their guide. In this way, a much clearer conception of the subject seems to be gained by them. After careful consideration, I have decided to follow this same plan in part, at least in some of the following chapters. I need scarcely add that the descriptions given are based upon the actual experiences of advanced occultists, including myself, and are not dogmatic statements of theory, conjectures, or speculations mere book occultists. Every fact herein stated may be verified by the experience of any advanced occultist. The forces of nature are not perceptible to the physical eye, except as manifesting through matter, but they are very real, as all of us know by experience. You cannot see electricity, but when you receive its shock you realize its reality. You cannot see the force of gravity, but you become painfully aware of its reality when it drops an apple on your head, or causes you to fall suddenly when you make a misstep on the curb of the street. In fact, it is realized by all advanced occultists, that if there really can be said to be any degrees in reality between things, the balance is in favor of the finer forms of substance and forces, and against the less fine. So, student, never permit yourself to think of the astral as something comparatively unreal, or as only relatively existent. I, of course, am not speaking of reality in the metaphysical sense of the term, for in such sense the entire manifested universe, including all of its planes, is unreal as compared to the one reality. And, again, Do not permit yourself to think of the astral senses as being one whit less real, reliable and important than those of the physical body. Each class of sense perception has its own proper field in which it is king. Each is master in its own realm.